the Fan.
It's a little frustrating.
There's far too many of you dying.
I think anyone who puckers up their lips and presses it against their boss's buttocks and then smooches is an ass kisser.
I seem to be inept at everything except my work. I'm good at my work. So I confine myself to that. All I want out of life is a 30 share and a 20 rating.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
The man's enlarged my mind, yeah. He's a poet, warrior in the classic sense. I'm a little man. He's a great man.
Think of it as colors. There's black and there's white. And in between is mostly gray. That's us. Now, gray is a tough color because it's not as simple as black and white. And for the media, certainly not as interesting. But it's who we are.
That's frustrating. It's very frustrating.
A little frustrating.
It's frustrating. It's frustrating. It's frustrating. I know it was a frustrating time.
That was kind of frustrating.
It's obviously frustrating, and it's not fun.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Obviously, it's frustrating.
Got my cell phone in case we make that big trade.
Frustrating, real frustrating.
Excuse me. That's all. I'm done.
This is your. The virus is spreading, and though it is not dangerous, it is absolutely pathetic. Leader Fan. Fan Radio Network.
Tweet that.
Yeah, tweet it. KFAN.com. 3 minutes, 10 seconds past 3 o'clock. Central Standard Time. Bumper to Bumper Show back. It's a post-Thanksgiving Monday edition of the program on a rather balmy Monday afternoon here in Minneapolis and St. Paul. I am the host of the program, the Bloviator in Chief. My name is Dan Barrero, and Guardsy is back with us for the second consecutive day. Two straight, this will be, correct? If I'm doing my math right.
Yeah, I was just making sure in my
two
head.
Two in a row for Mike Yo.
Did I miss anything that I was supposed to be at? No, I was here. I've been here two straight shows.
How many shows this week will you have to miss for Gopher women's basketball duties?
Zero.
Seriously?
Yeah, should be running Monday through Friday.
Well, what's going on? Are we not playing any games this week?
8 o'clock, Big Ten ACC Challenge against North Carolina Wednesday night.
Okay.
So I'll be here till 6:30. I'll get
so that's, my, that's here,
that's
obviously.
Here, yep. Okay. I'll get in my Tim Brewster helicopter. I'll get down to campus. I'll call the game, and I'll come home.
Are the Heels any good?
They're 6-0 right now. They're undefeated.
Ooh.
I don't know if they're any good.
Yeah,
I haven't
it's
done
hard
a deep
to know.
Dive yet, but they're 6-0.
6-0
for Boudreaux.
That's not a bad start. I know nothing about the Tar Heels. I know nothing about the Tar Heels men's team at this point, to be honest with
Think
you.
Think about it.
Let alone the women's club.
PA hit me with a couple of names today when I joined him, and I said, just send me those notes, because I just put the Roadrunners to bed. We had the Roadrunners at the barn yesterday.
You got to take them one at a time.
I mean, come on. I can't look ahead, so I'll do that today and tomorrow.
Bradshaw and Brian, inbox rebooted, booth at KFAN.com if you'd like to join the festivities this afternoon. By the way, is this real? Have you checked your Vikings press releases? Lately? Here, let me hit the... I got to get the proper breaking news.
Oh, yeah. For it. 303.
What was your favorite Patrick Peterson's return moment? Vikings announcing they've placed Peterson on the reserve/COVID-19 list. The savvy, offseason acquired veteran corner who was going to bring a little bit of experience and that aforementioned savvy, and I think has to a large degree when he's been able to play, which hasn't been often. He's off again, I think. Now, what I don't know about him is if he's vaccinated and then whether his protocol yet rules him out for the game against the Lions.
I know the answer to one of those questions, that he is vaccinated. Right. He was very public on his own podcast, about his vaccination status back in training camp.
All right.
Or right around there. And because he is vaccinated, as Ben Gessling deduces correctly, I would assume, he tested positive. It's not a close contact situation. Okay. It's nothing like that. So he tested positive, and we'll have to refresh the protocols on what that means for his availability a little bit later in the week and certainly for the Lions game and everything that comes with it. But he is vaccinated.
Are you starting to get worried about this allegedly loser-proof game in the Motor City?
I'm not. I'm really not. But it's only Monday. I mean, I can work my way into it.
I think you should.
I mean, if more people keep getting injured and pop positives and everything like that, sure. I mean, nothing is impossible.
I got a bad feeling.
Do you?
Well,
Monday.
It is only Monday, and they are the Lions, but you know how this thing works. They're going to have a game where they're going to play better than they are. It's inevitable. It's the way the National Football League works. It better not be this week, because then the whole thing, we all know about the schedule now loosening up, and, you know, that should put us still in good position to make a playoff run here. By the way, we are hearing from Ben, or I just heard from Ben Gessling, 10-day absence. He's vaxxed, so a positive test means 10 days. 10 days.
So he's not playing,
against the Lions.
No.
Man. We had four new players start along. None of our starters were available yesterday, along the defensive line, correct?
Right.
And one of those guys is still in the protocol too, right? Tomlinson.
Yeah.
But we expect, might he be available? But we don't think he's vaccinated.
Dalvin?
I think he's suspected as being not vaccinated. In any case,
the only way Peterson gets out of the box is, for example, if he's got no symptoms and has two negative tests later in the week. I think that's how he can get out of it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because who else did we have? And Ben can correct us if I'm wrong, but that's my understanding.
What he wrote was 10-day absence. He's vaxxed, so a positive test means 10 days.
I think you can test your way out of it eventually.
Okay, well, we'll double check on that. None of it's good. None of it's helpful. None of it is encouraging for a team that obviously is dealing with lots of injuries, I guess we should say, and other issues that are sidelining players, as we indeed know. It's going to be a very Vikings-intensive program today. That shouldn't surprise you on a Monday, but more than usual, given the Mike Zimmer presser is coming on or is going to be live during our time period. So at 4 o'clock, Mike Zimmer's presser live. That could be volatile. That could be controversial. Andre Patterson joins at 4:30, the Vikings defensive coordinator. And Ben Lieber is scheduled to join us at the bottom of this hour after taking last week off. Patrick Peterson on reserve COVID-19 list, as just announced by the Vikings officially within the last 3 or 4 minutes. I mentioned off the top of the program that we are indeed, or the virus is spreading, and though it is not dangerous, it is absolutely pathetic, leader. And I had hoped it could be isolated, at least this time around, in a town that more than most is obsessed with officiating. And I'm doubling down on the more than most. Well aware, other towns get pretty into this. There is no town as obsessed with officiating than ours. And it goes back to that inferiority complex we have. I've lived here long enough that even though I'm not one of us, I've observed it. And I've been told of it by ones of us's. It's that belief that we get screwed more often because we're considered flyover country. We're the little engine that could. And so it's a battle that's ongoing. But the virus is spreading at rapid rate in a way that is absolutely, it's beyond annoying It's just sad. It's just pathetic. And it's largely been isolated up until now. We thought we had the virus isolated this time around with the wolves. The constant chatter, the teeth gnashing, that we don't get the respect we deserve. Cat doesn't get the respect that he indeed deserves. He never gets the foul call. He gets murdered under the basket or wherever he is, driving to the basket, whatever he does. You hear it constantly. You hear it often on the broadcast, on the TV broadcast, as we've talked about before. It's endless. And by the way, for the record, our guy Jace Frederick, trying to do some analytic work on this, has offered this via Twitter. Sifting through officiating stats this morning, Timberwolves are called for 23 fouls a game, most in the NBA by two per game.
Think about it.
They also draw 20 fouls per game, seventh most in the NBA. So it's pretty likely, he writes, the Wolves games in general are the most whistled in the NBA. It is an absolute loser's lament. I have no problem with coaches trying to play the game and doing the spin. All coaches do that to a certain extent. But I'll just say it again. Watch the games. Watch Carl Anthony Towns. And he is his own worst enemy. Did he play soccer growing up? Are we sure he's not from Spain? Was he born in Spain?
I don't think he was.
Because he's got, to me, that soccer gene in him where he acts like he's being assassinated. And he's also got body control issues, as we've talked about before, where he's so ungainly that people are not sure whether he's actually got fouled or it's just his lack of body control. There's not a league-wide conspiracy against Cat or the Wolves, and there's not against the Minnesota Vikings. Mike Zimmer has caught the virus. He tells us he's vaccinated and he's gotten the booster. Doesn't seem to matter in his case. He's got it. That's what he went with after the game. They're constantly holding. We're going to get to that via talking points. But what? Where does this end? And again, and it plays beautifully in this town. Because for fans, that's what they want to hear. They don't want to hear about the mistakes that the team made, the opportunities that were squandered, the opportunity they got at the end of the game that they didn't even deserve and did nothing with. They don't want to hear about that. It's always easier to say, well, we got job. Zimmer said they're holding every play. It just gets so old. It gets you nowhere. That's different from saying there aren't individual calls that are blown. But we've been through this on this show so many times. I might respect the people who are saying we got job. And by the way, there are some Gesling analytics regarding that he's come up with via StarTribune.com. According to NFLPenalties.com, the Vikings have been the beneficiary of 1.64 holding calls per game, tied with Pittsburgh for the sixth highest rate in the league.
Did you see the game?
When on the road, no team has benefited from more holding calls than the Vikings, who've drawn an average of 2.8 holding flags on opponents per game. Does that sound like a conspiracy against us? Now, they shouldn't all be the same. Part of it is, if you got a good pass rush, you merit extra calls. I get that part of it as well. But we're playing this silly game, and again, it plays here so well. It goes back to, more than anything else, the Sid influence. I kiddingly suggested that he was going to be rat-a-tat-tatting on the door, the referees, the officials' door at halftime at Huntington Bank Stadium to rip some of the calls that went against the Golden Gophers. He set the tone for this so much, but the rest of us don't have to be prisoner of it. Especially when there's not the same. If I could trust that the people who are looking at calls that we're not getting and actually saying, here's why that was a blown call, if they were honest and were spending as much time examining the calls where we could have been called for holding, or calls that went our way that maybe were borderline and shouldn't have, I might trust it. But human nature being what it is, that's not the way people operate. That's quite frankly not even the way some media operate. they're constantly barraged with these whispers and in some cases declarations from within organizations. And then what they do, it's only human nature. They start watching what's happening to towns. They're not spending as much time breaking down Zapruder-like film on what we're getting away with or the possibility that we're getting away with stuff. And both of these analytics offered up by two local reporters would suggest that the conspiracy ain't quite as widespread against us as people apparently want to believe. Let's stop with this crap. It's boring. It doesn't accomplish anything, and it takes away from what we should be looking at, where we're playing poorly and where we have to play better, where we have to make more plays, where we have to be more consistent. That's what we...
The Fan.
It's like a mass hypnosis, and it is as predictable as, is it the Swallows that return to Capistrano?
They do.
It is unbelievable. People believe what they want to believe. Thielen was 100% a catch yesterday. That couldn't be more preposterous to me.
The Thielen catch?
Yes.
Oh, he caught that.
He did not catch it, but here's what I'll grant you. It's at least arguable. I don't think it's... If the ball... I don't want to argue about where the ball was, but to suggest that it was 100% a catch without considering the possibility of something else tells me, Christopher, where your head is, man. And I get it. It's the team that you root for. So when you talk about crucial calls, you're remembering the ones that worked against your team. You're not doing any research on the calls that go against the team you were playing or other teams at crucial points. And by crucial points don't have to happen with 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. It's a human reaction that I understand to the extent that then you don't have to deal with. Let's be honest about this. There were only two reasons the Vikings were in the game in the second half in the fourth quarter. One was a very nice, yet another kickoff return for a touchdown that got them back in it again. From that point forward, though, they didn't do anything offensively. And the other reason they had a shot is they got the ball back after a missed for Robbie Gould chip shot field goal that he went wide right for 42 yards. You gave up over 200 yards rushing. That's had, to me, if you want to give them an alibi, more to do with the fact that if none of your starting player, your entire starting defensive line is out, as we talked about on Sunday, it's going to be pretty hard to believe you're going to be okay defensively. That has more to do with that. Now, you can lick that wound and say, well, that's not a sign of that we're that bad a team, and I wouldn't disagree, but that's not officiating related. Same with the Wolves, where you concentrate on the ones, it feeds on itself, like I said. People start writing about it. You know what? Some truth to it. Some calls they're not getting. And then it's, what am I watching during the game? The only thing then you start watching is Towns. And you start watching, well, looked to me like he got fouled on that play. And you're ignoring all of the other things that take place over a period of game. If you honestly think that the number one reason the Wolves are, I was about to say struggling, but they're 500, are not, you know, five games above 500 is the officiating, you're smoking something, legally or illegally. The Vikings did not lose yesterday's game because of holding calls that were not called. We got more holding calls in our favor than they did yesterday. Even with all the Zimmer nonsense, we got him. But we also had a quarterback who's played very well this season, who was mediocre. Do the officials have anything to do with throwing the ball at JJ's feet in the end zone? It's just moronic. But if it makes you feel better about a loss, go ahead. All I'm telling you is you're never going to get the payoff you're looking for. because you're never going to be satisfied. You know why? Because you're coming at it from a rooting interest, and you're always going to see. There are bad calls that happen every game. But my point is, the ones you're going to notice are the ones that are going to happen against your team. You're not going to look back at, oh, man, we got away with one there. Or if you do, you're going to, you know what you're going to do? You're going to say it on the sly and say, well, they owed us at least that many, maybe several. Very quickly here, in fact, getting to the Vikings talking points, let's keep it there. The worldwide officiating conspiracy against Minnesota teams continues.
I think we misaligned on that one. The other ones were, I mean, these guys hold all the time, so they're grabbing us around the waist, grabbing our backs, and, you know, officials, they don't want to call it every play, but until they start calling every play, they're not going to stop doing it.
Talking to officials about the first evil, 20-yarder around the right end, Hendrick seemed to have gotten something there. Was that some part of what you're talking about?
That's most of the day. That's what I was talking to him.
I get away with a lot of holding. I mean, I think if you're running your feet and your hands in inside, just because the guy spins and flails his arm, it's not holding. He's just flopping. I mean, you can watch plenty of pass plays. I finally got a holding call out there in a pass route. I got hugged and tackled, and I think there were like three of those out there that don't get called. It's football, you know. Refs throw flags. Refs don't throw flags. It's just the game, and if you're going to sit on the sideline and complain about holding the whole time, I tell you guys to make better plays.
Play better. Now, I know it's – I didn't expect – no matter what Kittle really thinks, that he's going to say, Zim's got a point.
Yeah.
I get
that. We're a little handsy.
I understand that totally, but play better. Find other ways to overcome the vast right-wing officiating conspiracy against you. The Vikings didn't play well enough yesterday across the board. They were lucky to get back as close as they did because of the kickoff return. Without the kickoff return, I think that probably turns into a rout. We didn't score. I think our last non-return touchdown was about halfway through the third quarter, maybe. We didn't do anything offensively after that, quite frankly. Now, the Niners didn't, I don't think. I think they were scoreless in the fourth quarter as well, but they didn't need to score. They had their eight-point lead. I think they got their field goal to go up 34-26 very late in the third quarter, if I'm not mistaken. Very late in quarter number three. So, go ahead, knock yourselves out on it, but you're not going to get anywhere with it. It just gets. Somebody has emailed me and said he's tired of my shtick, and I'm going, no, the shtick is whining about officiating. I'm trying to rise above it. I'm trying to say, what's the point? Where does this get you? Other than, I guess, the adrenaline high of saying, not our fault. But in a game in which you could point to as many things breaking down as did yesterday, maybe in some cases for reasons beyond control, given how many people they had out defensively, it's just a waste of time. That's not shtick. The shtick is always going to the officiating card. And frankly, now, sadly, we have not one, but two teams back at it, either players, broadcasters, or in this case, the head coach, Mike Zimmer. It's the world now against the Minnesota Vikings. Meanwhile, Green Bay Packers won again, and they are back up to, is it a 3 or 4 game lead in the division? They won another game. They rallied from what took place last week here against the Vikings.
Ben, the FAN.
Never doubt Guardsy when it comes to National Football League COVID-19 protocol if you've had the vaccine. Ben Gessling did text back to me and say, Guardsy's correct on the protocol. So in the case of Patrick Peterson, he can test out of it. For those of you who just maybe have not heard the news that broke just at the start of our show, Vikings have placed Patrick Peterson on the COVID-19 list. But he is vaccinated, which means he can indeed test out of it. Tomlinson apparently is not. I don't know what his circumstance is, if he's likely to miss a second game or not. Ben Lieber is brought to us by Sierra Nevada. He is with us on the Connecticut Water Systems hotline. And look, this was an interesting, this I think for most of us, the Niners game represented the end of the very meaty middle of the schedule. You know, when we looked at it, we said, that's a tough, you know, that's a tough stretch here, man. And if you can get out to the other side of it in decent shape, then you've got certainly some forgiving games, it appears, to play. It's always dangerous to say that about the Bears, no matter what the Bears are, it seems. We have difficulty doing anything but splitting with them, but you got the Lions coming up. You know the schedule. So yep. For you, I saw some stat, and again, I don't want to get too hung up in the analytics, but before this game, I think our chances allegedly to make the playoffs was like 56%. Now it's down to 40, which I guess confuses me because I didn't think we needed this game as much as that statistic would indicate. So are you pretty comfortable with the position we're in here as we head to the stretch drive, or do you think that loss is going to come back to haunt the club?
Well, I do think that, you know, every playoff run needs some help on the outside, unless you're just dominating everybody and going for that number one spot. So is the loss as detrimental? I don't think so, because, you know, there are three other teams in the NFC that lost yesterday that really helped us out. So the thing that's disappointing is, are you just looking to get into the playoffs, or are you looking to get the best seed? And I think had we won, we really would have been in the driver's seat for that sixth spot, and then hopefully you could climb even higher than that based on how the rest of the other teams fared for the rest of the season. But now it kind of looks like, yeah, I would like to think that those odds would be higher than that 42%-ish after the team's loss yesterday. But we're still just kind of looking at that seventh seed, which, you know, I think people would be happy to get in the playoffs, but I think you'd be even happier if you're the sixth or the fifth.
Yeah, that's another great point. I think part of what everybody's looking for, what every team wants, is a sense that, all right, we're getting on a second half of the season run, right, where we're going to win 5 out of 6, which, by the way, could still happen based on the schedule. But you want to give yourself a feeling of, okay, we're playing well enough that it's not just the high isn't just to get in. The high is a chance to sustain it going someplace. Now, you know the number of people we have out, and I don't know if we have any final verdict on Dalvin. The last I heard on Dalvin was it's a serious injury, but not likely to be a season-ending injury. You may have more information on it than I do, but we know about what's going on the defensive line. We know about the Everson Griffin situation. Is it going to be hard to get on the kind of run we're talking about here if you just don't even have the pieces in place that you need to get it done?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, health is a huge part of it. I mean, sometimes it's health and it's luck. And do we all have confidence in Alexander Mattison that he can run the offense and all that stuff? Yeah, but, you know, he's not Dalvin Cook. You know, we've played well with Alexander, and he ran really well. And let's hope that we get Kinnae involved a little bit more, because I think we all have really trusted his athleticism out there on the kickoff returns. I think my biggest concern is the defensive line. Obviously, Hunter's going to be out for the rest of the season. I imagine that Everson is going to be out the rest of the season. And, you know, as an aside, I think from a personal level, I think that he needs to just sit out regardless and take care of himself mentally. But then what do we get? You know, when is Dalvin Tomlinson going to come back from his COVID situation? When is Michael Pierce going to come back from his elbow situation? Like, those two guys right there are the biggest difference makers as we approach the stretch of the season.
I think it's very true. On Pierce, I've almost reached a point where I'll be shocked if he comes back at all. And that might not be fair to the situation, but it just seems like it's been so ongoing with him. And I don't even know what the latest information is that we have on him. I think people have almost given up asking because it's almost like, well, we'll just wait to see when he's actually, you know, going to be available to us.
Well, I know that's the thing. Like, I think we are all expecting him to be back within, I thought it was just kind of like week to week sort of thing. Yeah. And then they put him on the IR and it sounds like, well, he either re-aggravated it or it was much worse than we initially thought. But the point is, it's not getting better. And because of that IR designation, we've got to wait for that thing to expire before he can even be activated and back. And so, we might be looking at, you know, mid-December by the time we get him back. And then is he going to be 100%? I still think, you know, even having him as a rotational guy, let's just say that he gets, you know, 20 snaps a game, and then you start getting, you know, more of James Lynch in there and Armon Watts. Well, I think that's a lot better. You know, that we could have used at least one or two extra rotational guys in yesterday's game.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, literally, your club was putting guys out there that I'm going to ask Andre Patterson at 4:30. Had he even heard of a couple of those players before they were in the lineup? You know, I mean, because I mean, that's the position the team was in. When you're using four people other than the ones you in the best case scenario expect to use along the defensive line, that generally is a recipe for a long day.
Yeah, especially with that offense. My goodness, I think they just ran toss right, toss left the whole game. You know, and they're. You know, there's nuance to it. You know, sometimes they crack blocks. Sometimes there's two crack blocks and one puller, two pullers. Sometimes it's designed to go downhill with the cutback action. You know, so it is a really creative way to do one simple action, but then to get three different runs off of it. And when they, you know, stuck to their game plan and they were able to go 21 points unanswered and have us on our heels, that fit right into their game plan and what they want to do. And they just mashed on us. And I felt bad for our defense because, you know, I've been there. It just becomes a 9-on-7 drill. And this isn't practice where guys are kind of lighting up after a few steps. This is, you know, full tilt to the ground and they want to maul you. And, as hard as they tried, and I thought there were some great individual efforts. It's just we didn't have enough bodies to rotate to stay fresh. We never got off the field. The offense didn't help out at times either, controlling the clock. And so from that standpoint, it was kind of a disaster.
What did you see? You know, Cousins obviously was not very accurate on a number of throws yesterday. So do you just chalk that up to, okay, it's going to happen. Some days you're going to be more accurate than others. Do you think it was something they were doing? Or what did you observe regarding our inconsistent offense and especially his lack of accuracy?
Well, I thought he did really well for about a quarter and a half. I mean, I would even say the first half I was happy with him. I didn't think that he did anything, you know, that was hurting the team. I thought he was helping the team and he looked poised and I thought there were times where even he knew, you know, obviously going into the game, he knows that the pass rush is going to be something he's got to be watching out for. And I thought given all that he still stayed in the pocket and stayed tough and was delivering the ball knowing he was going to get hit. And then Clint did a good job of kind of moving the pocket around on that one drive where they really incorporated a couple boots. And so I thought the creativity was there to keep their pass rush at bay. But then in the second half, it just seemed like he was feeling that pressure a little bit more. He was thrown off his back foot. He wasn't able to step into throws. And unfortunately, you know, that's just one of the chinks to his armor is he's not one of those accurate passers when he's off his back foot. You know, we see Aaron Rodgers do it all the time, but that's a special talent. And so Kirk needs to feel comfortable. He needs to step into throws. And that's where I think the biggest difference was in the second half. He just wasn't able to step into the throws and he kind of lost confidence in his offensive line.
Talk to me about what you saw on the Dalvin injury play. Cause it was such an odd, his body gets at a weird angle. And I guess I didn't completely understand what got hurt and how exactly he got hurt to the degree he did. What did you see on that play?
Well, I believe it could have been DJ Jones, number 93, who was, you know, golly. I mean, you talk about a guy that doesn't get enough respect on that defensive front. He basically, whoever it was, just pushed Ole Udo right underneath the pads and pushed him about 3 to 4 yards in the backfield. And so, you know, Dalvin gets the handoff. You know, his eyes are going towards his target, towards his running target, and he just gets blasted from his own player. And so when he was looking to brace himself to hit the ground, you know, his left elbow was sort of cocked and it hit the ground right on his elbow with his arm bent, and that just sort of sent the shockwave right up to his shoulder and that's what sounds like that caused that dislocation and labrum tear, and thankfully that's all it really was. You know, labrum tears, you know, unfortunately are pretty common. You know, I've never had a dislocation, but I've certainly had a labrum tear, and a lot of defensive players or linebackers have had labrum tears, and they're not fun. It's not easy, but at least he can, it sounds like there's no surgery, so he's just going to rehab his way back, and then, you know, hopefully there's no surgery necessary even after the season.
You're not a doctor and you don't play one on TV, but you were once a pro football player. So what do you think is realistic on him? I mean, it sounds like this means it doesn't have to end his season, but I assume it's going to take some time for that kind of thing. I mean, what do you think is realistic on him?
Well, for him, I mean, I would say at least 3 weeks. Yeah. You know, I tore my labrum as well in my right shoulder, so I know what it feels like, and I know how loose it feels. Even just running, even when you're running, it feels like it's just going to slip on you. And so, you know, it's a lot of rehab. It's just a lot of strengthening. It's a, you know, just getting that shoulder joint to calm down. And thankfully, you know, I was never in a position where I had to get hit at awkward angles. I mean, at least for the most part, as a defensive player, you kind of dictate the angle at which you take the impact. And for him, it's a little different. You know, he's dealt with collarbone shoulder injuries. And so he knows, what that pain is going to feel like. And so unfortunately, you know, he's going to go through about 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks of intensive rehab. And then there's just going to become a point in time where you just have to suck it up, you know,
yeah, like, yeah.
You know, you're going to have to, you know, take whatever's necessary for game day and then rehab it during the course of the week. I mean, he's granted himself no more practice, I think, for the rest of the season. So that's kind of a plus.
That's a good point. Ben Lieber is with us. Don't forget to the Mike Zimmer presser. We'll go to that live at the top of the 4 o'clock hour of the show. Okay, you mentioned Madison. We know he's capable. He's not Dalvin. Do you think we're likely to try, that the team is going to be tempted to try to give more reps to our hotshot return guy that had another touchdown, or is that kind of a tough deal at this late point of the season, a relatively late point?
No, I really hope so. You know, he was in the game a yep. couple times, but he got what, one or two carries in the game, and I really hope that they lean more into that. It's interesting though, because you know, he was behind Breece Hall at Iowa State, and Breece is an All-American, but you know, it's curious why he never got more reps as a running back, even in a situation like this where, like, okay, can you give me 10 reps in a game? You know, like, why couldn't you see the field in college, and now we're going to lean on you in the NFL just a year later to get some of those? So I'm not sure where that situation is, but I think we all enjoy watching him, you know, run kickoffs back. I mean, he's certainly got the vision, he's got the wiggle, mm-hmm. he's got the
for
speed.
Sure. Yeah.
I'd like to think that he has the intelligence to understand where these plays are going to be hitting. So let's hope that they get him up to speed as soon as possible, because you certainly can't have Alexander out there with 35 carries a game.
No. Well, is there any reason in your mind to believe during this stretch where Dalvin is out that the team, I've read this a couple places, that in effect what this should, the signal for the Vikings and for Zim and company should be that whether you want to or not, you got to put it in Cousins' hands and the receivers' hands even more than has previously been emphasized on the basis of some success doing that to a certain extent the last couple of weeks. Do you think there's any going to be any kind of big change in emphasis above and beyond? Are we going to become Air Coryell? Or what do we do during this interim period offensively without Dalvin?
Yeah, I actually think that we might need to start doing that. You know, this is going to be a special challenge for Kubiak and how his approach is going to be. Just when you feel like you've got a little bit of an identity going forward, I think you're going to start seeing more of, you know, really kind of what we saw in this last game against the Niners when they started out. You know, we saw mm-hmm. a lot of quick throws to the outside, a lot of wide receiver screens on first down, you know, much more throwing the ball these last three games on first down than we probably have in the previous games before that. So I would like to think that, you know, I don't think that we're going to be throwing it 50 times a game, but I think you're going to start to see more of a 60-40 pass to run. And it might look and feel different. You got to be careful though, because, you know, a lot of times when you throw on first down and it's incomplete, all of a sudden now it's like, hey, punt team, get ready, defense, get ready. And, you got to weigh those options. The defense has been on the field a lot, I think, this second half of the season. And you get a passing offense out there and they're unsuccessful in a couple drives, and then our defense can't get off the field. All of a sudden, time of possession gets flipped, guys get worn down, and we just talked about the lack of bodies we have on defense. So it's going to be interesting how they find this balance.
You know, Gold misses the 42-yard field goal, which means that it's still a one-possession game, couple minutes to go, and you're in decent not great, but decent field position. I think you were starting between the 30 and the 35, somewhere in there. What had you seen enough offensively to think they got this thing? There's a real good chance they're going to go down there and at least get the touchdown. You need the 2-point conversion as well. What was your feel after Gold went wide right?
Believe it or not, I was actually really optimistic. I know everybody likes to hammer Kirk and say that he's not a come from behind game winning drive type of guy, but I'm personally convinced that he's got it. He's shown it already several times this year. Heck, last week he did it basically twice. So I thought this is a good scenario for us. You know, there's times where their corners were, you know, they were on skates. I think they were a little intimidated by our passing attack. And as long as I felt comfortable, as long as we could give Kirk the protection, then we were going to be okay. But, you know, therein lies the problem. Yeah. And that goes right into their hands as well. I mean, they have some phenomenal pass rushers. And, the speed of the operation just got accelerated. And, you know, Kirk missed that throw. And it, you know, could have been a huge situation for JJ in the middle of the field, but it was another errant pass.
Last item for you is from college football. I'm going to read you some numbers, and you tell me if you think this is a good deal for Lincoln Riley, now headed to USC. $110 million contract. $110 million contract. USC is buying both his homes in Norman for $500,000 over asking, which is, I guess, akin to another $1 million bonus. They're buying a $6 million home for him in Los Angeles, and they're giving him or granting him unlimited use of a private jet 24/7 for the family. Does that sound like a good deal?
Well, hold on, though. The $6 million house in L.A., that's like a two-bedroom condo. It's like 1,500 square feet, well, I think. Yeah. So, but still pretty nice.
Still not bad. That's a pretty good gig if you can get it, isn't it, Ben?
Well, I'd even add, you know, after being in California really this whole last week, I mean, you might want to throw in a gas card because it's over $5 a gallon.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
My goodness. I mean, yeah. Why wouldn't you take that deal? Yeah. Look, he's, I feel like he's done everything that he can at Oklahoma, and with them going to SEC, which, you know, the rumors are he was not happy about that. I still think it's a really stupid move for them in Texas to do that. Now you're just going to be sort of a middling team in the SEC, and they're just chasing the money, which is also ruining the integrity of their football programs. But he's going to go out to the West Coast where, you know, right now, instead of going against the Alabamas and the Georgias and the Ole Misses and all that stuff, he's got Utah and he has Oregon. And with a name like USC, all these recruits are now just going to stop in their tracks, do an about face and be like, hey, okay, I'm going to reevaluate USC. What's going on here? It's one of these blue blood programs. You know, I don't think that he's going to have any problems recruiting. He's going to have a dynamite top of the country recruiting class here in several weeks. So I think that he has a real chance to go out and compete for the Pac-12 title in year one. And then after that, you know, we'll see what happens. And I think he'll bring some real legitimacy to that conference because they desperately need it. And I think, you know, all the other teams in that conference, they actually should chip in a little bit of money. I mean, maybe they should
yeah,
USC and say, right, hey, yeah, thanks a lot. You might actually save our TV contract, yeah, and all this other
good
stuff.
Point.
So, you know, it's a bonus for everybody.
But last real thing real quick here. You're not worried about the Lions game, are you? I am. I actually am a little bit. As odd as that sounds, as awful as they've been, and as ridiculous as that sounds, I got to admit, maybe I just need to come down from this last loss, but I got a really weird feeling about what could happen.
Well, I always have a weird feeling what could happen in Detroit, but yeah, there's a couple things that I think are going to be working for us. We're going to have, I think we're going to have some hungry guys out there.
Yeah.
You know, I get the feeling that there might be some changes at the offensive line. If that's the case, then I think you're going to have a couple, you know, at least one more motivated player up front to make it all work. You're going to have a really motivated Alexander Mattison. You know, he's going to go out there and he's going to run, you know, 100 miles an hour. And I think, you know, by looking at the way Justin Jefferson sat on the sideline and just sat on the injury tent bench while everybody else was exchanging jerseys and saying pleasantries after the game, he sat there, you know, with a pissed off look on his face. I think he's going to go out and be extra motivated. And I think defensively, you know, we've got a lot of young guys up front that they can't look at this game like I think other veterans can and say, ah, well, we're just going into lowly Detroit against a sleepy team and a sleepy stadium. You know, I think that the Armand Wattses and the James Lynches and those guys, hopefully we get Willekes back. I mean, he would be a huge, I think he would have been a huge addition. His Tasmanian type of play in yesterday's game would have been a huge benefit. Hopefully he can come back this week. And if that's the case, I think you're going to have a bunch of young, hungry guys out there wanting to compete. And, you know, speaking of Willekes, I mean, he's a Michigan State guy going back to Detroit. That'd be great for him. And since I'm being long-winded here, you know, I know that I'm brought to you by Sierra Nevada, which I do want to thank them. I feel like I've been missing this whole season. You know, they gave me all these great beers to try. And they have one called the Wild Little Thing.
Oh.
And I'm like, well, how appropriate is I should probably pick a wild little player, a wild little thing for each game.
Okay.
Somebody that I think is just maybe didn't get enough attention. So I'm going to go with my Sierra Nevada Wild Little Thing player of the game is Armand Watts. I thought he played well, and I think he continues to develop into a nice little pass rusher and disruptor up front. So there's that.
Well played, and we'll appreciate the time as always. We'll chat next week.
All right.
Thanks, Lieber.
Good, my man.
That is Ben Lieber, Nacho Lieber. Let's get a quick pause in. We're going to run a little late, but we will give you the Mike Zimmer presser.